This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspiring, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials, serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. This is The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and it's certainly a pleasure to have you joining us this evening, as usual. If you want to join in on the conversation, the numbers are 323-6232, 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. We're going to have a conversation around election from a different perspective. We can look at the potential leaders and why and how do we reconcile our involvement, the electorate involvement in the selection of leaders, and why some of the challenges and some of the dilemma which voters face are in existence. And then we are going to take a look at leadership and, in a way, extending this discussion, because this election is really about choosing who we consider to be the best person to lead us at a constituency level and at a national level. Going forward, I am convinced, and I'm sure that many of you are, that going forward, that this is going to require, the next couple of years is going to require strong leadership, leadership with significant political will to make the changes, to implement the reforms, to do the things which are necessary, to work within the confines of limited financial resources in order for us to get to that place where the country can start to move forward. I think it's going to be very, very important that leadership steps up to the level that leadership needs to be. And, you know, it's not a critique or a knock against a particular person or any particular group. The bottom line is, my conclusion is that this time around, regardless of who wins the government, who has the privilege to serve as the government for the next 5 years, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be different. It's going to be challenging. And it's, too, I think, it's rich with opportunities, put it that way. It's really rich with opportunities given the challenges that we're facing from the pandemic, from the global crisis, and from the myriad of problems which really exist in the Bahamas prior to now. And so we're going to have that type of a conversation this evening around leadership and how leadership may impact those with luxury leadership. We should have on our live line, do we have Percy? Yes. And so we have on our live line Dr. David Burrows, the senior pastor for Bahamas Faith Ministry. And, you know, many of you here in the Bahamas know of him, but persons who are listening via our streaming on Facebook, you know, is a leading figure, an individual who you would consider to be an authority on leadership and many other issues relating to country. And so we want to say welcome to The Essentials once again, Dr. Burrows.
My pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so always a pleasure to interact with you. So let's let's talk about what you want to talk about. It's about politics in the Bahamas. It's the fact you're going to go into an election on September the 16th. And you have some thoughts on that. I know that Dr. Diggis will be joining us. Is Dr. Diggis there yet? Producer, Dr. Diggis joining us yet? No? Okay, so is there?
I saw him.
Okay, Dr. Diggis, are you there?
I'm right here. Listen, it's great to be a part of the conversation. Honored to be in the presence of Dr. Pastor Dave Burrows. And you know, thank you for inviting me, Hubert. I'm looking forward to being a part of the conversation.
Definitely. I look forward to engaging you. We had a brief conversation recently, and it has whet my appetite for more interaction with yourself, I think. You know, we as citizens and residents, I think we have an obligation where we have the ability to help to change the narrative. And this is exactly what we are trying to do here. So let's jump right to you, Pastor Burrows and Dr. Diggis. You will be able to chime in, ask questions, pass on your comments. What is it about politics in the Bahamas which reaches out to you? How would you... If a total stranger to the Bahamas asks you to describe politics in the Bahamas, what would be, you know, your styling?
In terms of describing what Bahamian politics is like?
Yes, yes.
I would say that we are a microcosm of colonial politics. Mm-hmm. So basically, the political system that we have is not our own. It's been borrowed from Britain, and we are a victim of the limitations and the constraints of that system. So, for example, in America, the representative democracy allows you to vote for your representative. So you vote for your congressman, and your congressman has to enunciate what policies and what programs and so on that they are going to represent you on. And you vote for them, and they actually go to Congress with that mandate. In the Bahamas, it's a little bit different, because even though you say that, the way Parliament is structured, where the Prime Minister really has the ultimate authority and can determine whether you live or die politically, you basically are emasculated to some extent, where you can't really represent the way you would want to. So that's a part of the system of politics in the Bahamas. And so we don't have a lot of independence when it comes to politics. The Westminster system is a system that is very constraining, especially for independent thinkers. And I think that's kind of Bahamian politics. The other thing about Bahamian politics, you know, it's evolved. We have seen changes over the years where, you know, previously, let's go back to 1967. In 1967 is when you had majority rule. Once majority rule began, the existing political infrastructure changed hands. But essentially, the policies didn't change. Mm-hmm. When I say the policies didn't change, there were changes in terms of policies that benefited the black majority, but not policies that changed the way business was done. So after the election in 1967, I remember several years later when I worked in government, you know, we would go to the family islands. And when you go to the family islands, you'll be driving down the road, and the road is clear. I mean, you know, it's paved and everything. And then you go into another settlement, and it's, you know, you have potholes and craters and everything. And you begin to realize that it was a part of the politics of the day. So the same thing that the former colonial government did was carried over in some respects. So you... depending upon how you voted, determine whether or not you voted to be paid. You know, it's things like that.
Yeah. You had a paper recently. You wrote a paper recently. Before I come to you, Dr. Diggis, And you describe the kind of the essence of Bahamian politics in the way you said it's entertainment, drama, culture, music, suspicion, fear, and ultimately a return to a normal, to normal until the cycle returns again 5 years. What in that represents normal to you? What is the normal? We still have Dr. Boris there? No? Dr. Boris, did you hear the question? Okay. So let me get you to chime in, Dr. Diggis. What would be your take, broadly, and we're not getting into partisan politics. I would not want to drag you into a situation like that. But broadly speaking, what would be your take if I was to ask you a similar question, your sense of how politics is in the Bahamas?
That really is an interesting question. And thank you so much for not dragging me into the weeds of the show. But you know, I'm going to bring a slightly different perspective, which is a changing, and this is an extension of where Dr. Burroughs took his commentary. I think we need to be mindful of the changing of expectations. Dr. Burroughs just described the traditional, the legacy politics, rooted in party, and it speaks to the way the control of decision-making is played out for the time that the party who wins happens to be in government. And this has been like a to and fro for a while. You know, I call it a Saxons and Valley Boys show for a while, to use that metaphor. Mm-hmm. And I believe, though, Hubert, that there is a groundswell of a changing expectation. The politics, which you know we accept, it's going to set policies, legislations, the rules of the way the country is run. We accept that. But I think you're going to find that the expectation is that the politician brings something else to the table. Instead of broken promises, there is an expectation being put on the politician to start a conversation that clarifies issues like, what is the Bahamas? What is it like to be a Bahamian? What is the vision for the Bahamas? What is it that we can do? What is possible for the Bahamas to do? And how can I participate in all that's possible for the Bahamas to do? I think that's what we need to be minded of. I suspect that this next election, this imminent election, is going to be quite the flavor of what Dr. Burroughs has described. But my caveat is to be minded of this groundswell of changing expectations.
Yeah, but and I would agree with you. And certainly the expectations are changing. The electorate is that more literate from a political point of view, I speak of. They are more exposed. They understand the issues, and certainly I've been making this argument recently that COVID has caused us to pay more attention to the politics, pay more attention to the leadership, pay more attention to the fundamental underpinnings of the economy and the way the country works. And as a result of that, you're going to see that groundswell that you speak of, where persons are going to be checking the system more from an informed basis. The only issue with that is that the system itself is so rigid and outside of the control of persuasive influence of the electorate once they would have voted, that it's almost zero to no chance that you are going to get these changes unless the elected officials are committed to a significant suite of reform and reform not only in a legislative way, but also a reform in the way they think, the way they see politics, the way they do leadership, the way they interact and serve their constituents, and the whole economics of party politics and being in power. Unless there are some fundamental changes, while the groundswell is there and while the expectation exists, it may very well be that you'd see no tangible change in the near term. We have Dr. Bowers back.
Yes.
Yeah, so, go ahead and give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, first of all, let me greet Dr. Degas and say it's such a pleasure to be in your presence and to be sharing this show with you. Let me just say, Dr. Degas mentioned something that I think is very important. I was describing traditional politics and how the politics was beginning to evolve over the years. Mm-hmm. So there has been an evolution and there are changes. One of the changes that we've seen is that people are not as gullible and vulnerable as they used to be mm-hmm. to the political game. So for years ago, what would happen is that every election, you know, you buy some refrigerators, you pay this person, the next person, and then you secure a vote. The electorate evolved to the point where they began to demand accountability. So it was not taken for granted that one party would win. So we saw a maturing of the electorate, but some of those vestiges remain. I think what is happening now is that the electorate has gotten to the point where they are saying to the political elites that, look, we don't believe any of you. You know, that's why what's been happening is that you've been having voting based upon voting a party out, mm-hmm. not voting a party in. So it's not like the electorate says, okay, we appreciate your ideas. We appreciate what you bring to the table. And we think you have a better vision. What's been happening is the electorate has been saying, we are so disappointed that you think we are so stupid that we can bring you in to bring about change and you do the same thing that the last guys did. That's essentially what I see has happened. And so the electorate is now demanding more accountability. Yeah. If you promise something, we want you to deliver on it. So if you promise, you know, free this, or you promise change in the system, you promise openness, you promise transparency. But now is that if you don't deliver on those things, then you get voted out. We need to move to, and I think we need to move to a change of system and a change of philosophy. So for example, there are a number of countries in Europe that have an interesting philosophy. So the Bahamas is basically a capitalistic society. There are a few countries in Europe where the way they approach governance and the way they approach managing people and politics is interesting because they begin with the premise that the government takes care of the basics for people and then allow people to use their talents, their gifts and abilities to rise above that. So in places like, I think it's Denmark, Sweden, a number of those places, things like healthcare free, education is free and so on. And then you move into, you still have an element of capitalism, but it begins with a consideration of the people. One of the things that I said is this, no Bahamian should be healthless, foodless, or shelterless. Mm-hmm. So we need to change the way we look at the starting point for governing in the Bahamas.
Okay.
Some people may say, well, we don't have the resources to accomplish these things. But the truth of the matter is that every country in the world has enough resources for its population. The issue is distribution and management.
Yeah, and that
so
is all.
I think if we change,
yeah, that sorry, is always going to be a big issue. I think I'm getting some feedback from you, Dr. Boris. So see if we can work on that. I just want to punt this over to Dr. Degas. As it relates to the citizen and politics, you talk about this groundswell. And obviously, if there is this groundswell, it means that at least on the ground, an awakening in activism and persons now starting to understand the role that they play and the contribution that they can make to the further democratization of whatsoever it is, or what it means to be Bahamian, what it means to be a nation, what it means to be involved in nation building. To what extent do we need to have greater involvement of the regular citizen in this process, not just on the day going to the polls and, you know, marking the X, but being actively involved in the discussion, the national conversation, and using whatsoever resource they have, whatsoever option they have to send clear messages to the leadership as to the way they wish the country to go? What are your thoughts on that?
So this is really core where you're taking this conversation, Hubert. You mentioned in your previous commentary about the role of the government to the extent that it controls any decision to make a change, such that the facilitation of this maturity of politics that you describe can happen. And Dr. Burrows took the conversation in a very interesting place, Copenhagen, Denmark, where you see examples of governments who have asked themselves about their role. They're not the party in power. They're the government of the country.
Right.
And as much as that may seem to be nuanced, it is just diametric opposites what you bring. If you come in as the party that won, your agenda becomes completely your party and your color, which I think we all understand. And again, the metaphor of the Saxons and the Valley Boys and John Canoe is over. But if you come in as the government of the country, the government of the people, and you move your game up to this mature level that says, any one of us may well be in a position to govern. This is not exclusive to any one of us, as elections will happen. But is there something bigger than the party? And completely, yes. The thing that's bigger than the party is called the government. And it works in the interest of whatever is best for the people. So the facilitation that you ask, to me, is the responsibility. It's almost as if the government is creating a path for conversation, for arguments. If you don't encourage the activism, then you're going to get very violent reactivism. You need to create the forum where individuals can wallow in their differences. It is out of so many differences and so many perspectives that we will start to chart a course for the Bahamian economy and the Bahamas of the future to find the best place. And so I enjoy the fact that you took the conversation up to the level of maybe there needs to be a recognition by whomever the government of the day is that we need to focus on something bigger than us, called the Bahamas of the future. Then you will start to see some of the topics that Dr. Burrows just referenced, like healthcare, like education, like basic income or basic living, basic cost, basic ability to afford living. Then you will start to see some of those topics being addressed in a nationalistic manner. And I think it is there where we're going to find solution. It is about John Canoe and the sustenance of John Canoe. You know, well, one group won, so they own
bragging rights.
That's where I want to take them.
Yeah, I think that is so important, because we have to get to the place where, as Dr. Burrows mentioned, that every single country have sufficient resources, you know, broadly speaking, and in a generalized way, to satisfy its citizenry. It's always come down to an issue of how that is distributed, and we know that, you know, there is significant concentration in certain areas. What I want to touch with you, Dr. Burrows, is this whole idea where involvement in politics or engaging in it, whether at an intellectual level, debate in the street, being seen as somebody who is interesting, sometimes is discouraged. You know, you are a citizen. You're not supposed to get into politics. You're not supposed to talk about politics. You're a Christian. Certainly, politics is not. Do we get to the place where we sensitize and educate and enlighten individuals to understand that everything that we are and we hope to be will be enabled and facilitated by the extent to which we do politics, whether it's big P or small P? Talk to us.
I think one of the problems is that most people don't understand what the word politics means. The word politics comes from the Greek word politikos, which means of, for, or relating to citizens. So if you are a citizen, you are a part of the political process. What happens is that citizens have abrogated their responsibility to be a part of the political process and cast it on to a few people. The only problem with that is that if you don't have a seat at the table, you become a victim of the negotiations. So essentially, what we all have to do is understand that politics is not just, so politics is being in charge of the school board, being in charge of the community association, the crime watch, and so on. Because what you do is you get involved and you have an input in the governance of your surroundings. And I think we have, as citizens, we have to realize that if you go to a church, it doesn't mean you cease to become a citizen. So people will say things like, well, you know, if you're a Christian, stay out of politics. If you stay out of politics, then it means that people who have a different belief system or a different value system are making laws for you. So we have to all be involved, and we have to just find what is the appropriate setting for us to be involved. As a senior pastor, I've decided that based upon the fact that I pastor a church with people of different political persuasions and opinions, I don't want to be involved in partisan politics. Mm-hmm. However, I am involved in activism. I write the prime minister to the ministers of government. I have a section in the newspaper where I publish articles every week. And so I speak about the issues. I talk to the influencers. I give them my opinion. And that's my political involvement. So each of us needs to find how we can function in the political system in a way where we fulfill our duty to politics as citizens. Politics also means the governing of resources and distribution of power, distribution of resources and allocation of power. So if somebody is going to distribute the resources or be in charge of the distribution of resources, if you decide to leave that to a certain group of people, then again, you become a victim. So I think we have to stop thinking of politics as involving a narrow group of people and understand that politics happens on different levels, and every level is important, and each of us must be engaged.
Yes, I think that is really, really important. And the way you put it, I would take your own words and I would put it very slightly. Each of us have a role to play in nation building. And politics, as we see it, being played out between two parties or three parties or any number of parties, is really part and parcel of the process of nation building. It ought to be a battle of ideas. It ought to be a battle for the imagination of us being better, for the country being better, for selling the idea of how we can move towards that point. Dr. Diggis referred to it this way, as a journey to best, you know, journey to our better self, moving, always evolving. So if we look at politics through that type of a prism, then each and every single one of us, at any point in time that we are engaged in any activity, we should do that with a view of helping to build and grow the country. I am sitting here on the radio, I'm facilitating this conversation. We are having this conversation really with a view of saying, look, be sensitized that there is a role for every single individual to play in the growth and the development of the country. And if you thought that simply by handing over the power to a small group of individuals is the sum total of your contribution, then you're being suboptimal. You are not being good stewards of your potential or enabling the potential for growing the country. And so we want to say to individuals this afternoon as we have this conversation, and there's much more to go, think about it in that way. Let's leave the partisan type of a view. Let's leave the analogy that Dr. Diggis used, you know, Valley Boys versus Saxon. Because at the end of the day, John Kuni must win. The Bahamas must win in order for all of us to win. Because only at that stage. We're going to take ourselves a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to jump right back into the conversation. Please join us after the break. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We have two brilliant minds. So if you have questions, then certainly you know that they will be answered this evening. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Come right back.
Now that your age is not everything, now that your kids call you for advice, now that you can achieve anything you set your mind to, why stop? Nourish your strength and energy with Ensure. Ensure provides protein, antioxidants, key vitamins and minerals to support your immune system. Your moment to enjoy your vitality, why stop? Your life, your health, your Ensure.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We are having ourselves a conversation. We're talking a little bit about the political process, not politics, but the political process and how do individuals engage in that process. So let me go start with you, Dr. Diggis, as we got the input from Pastor Burrows, and you know, I think he outlined very clearly why is it important for persons to see themselves as part and parcel of this whole process of politics. But being political and versus being partisan, we definitely, as we sit and look at what has been done after persons have been selected, the government has been formed, we have to be always cognizant of how the decision-making is affecting the country and whether it has been done in a very balanced fashion or it's been done in a partisan fashion. Talk to us about that and how not prosecuting those decisions in the proper way holds implication for the growth and the development of not only the people but the country at large.
I think it's really important for us to appreciate that the system is imperfect, but it's the one that we have. You know, pay attention in the politics to how it works. It's the majority that wins. And, you know, if 10,000 persons comprise a constituency and 5,001 vote a particular way, then in that simple example, they win. But it does leave you thinking, well, what is the will of the 4,999, say, in a two-party system, who did not win? And so I think we need to be less focused on, okay, it's over, we won, and now look at how does it play out in terms of what happens day to day after the election. So the election process, democracy, an imperfect one, this is the one that we go with the majority. But realizing its imperfection means that is another reason why we have to pay more attention between elections on what is more important than the process of electing the government. It's the process of making the Bahamas successful. Mm-hmm. It's the process of actually getting the government to work. And there's a lot that contributes to getting the government to work. Dr. Burrows indicated his multiple levels of involvement. And I think he's setting the theme and giving your listening audience examples as to where you may insert yourself so that you're not stuck, you're not into such a deeply immovable mind that you're actually able to make adjustments or pivot, as we speak a lot of in my line and running an organization. You retain the ability to pivot depending on the circumstances that surround you. So the politics and the political process, very important. No need to diminish that.
Yeah.
The party who seeks to win, truly significant. And they have to themselves step up to the plate. They control the decisions. That's the way it's designed. Mm-hmm. And there are multiple individuals who sit at the table, and they are going to be influencers. And that's something that all of us involved in the voting process must pay attention to. But once that is clear, let us focus more on building something that is greater than ourselves, greater than the party, which is how do we get this Bahamas to work?
Yeah. We have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome to the...
Godly days is talking away so long with you and your panel, Hubert.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Brayman Dallin Ferguson here. The gentleman that spoke last, right?
Yeah.
I want to say to him.
Dr. Diggis.
What's his name?
Dr. Diggis?
Dr. Diggis, how are you?
I am well, thank you. How are you
Hello?
Doing?
Hello? I cannot hear you.
I am very well. How are you doing?
Oh, boy, you're not coming over.
Okay, he's saying he's well, and he's asking you how you do. So,
oh, okay, I'm holding. Yeah. Rough, but I'm holding.
All right.
But what I want to say, right, Dr. Diggis, you speak of getting the government to work. Work on what? You see, the thing is, politicians should have an objective for the whole country, not only or a general illustration, say a few people, paraphrasing, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You must have an objective for all, and whosoever come behind you should be able to build on that objective. Now, that objective must be to benefit the whole country, everybody that's in the country. When that's not happening, then you're not doing justice to the Bahamas or
definitely.
The country. Okay?
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree with you. I think.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And this is where you have this whole idea of having a national development plan and a consensus around from various parties as to how we'll move forward. We have another caller. Both doctors, you are a bit today. So we have another caller. Go ahead. You are on The Essentials. We've lost the one. Okay, please call back. So, yeah, the area I would like to throw this now, though, is as we look across the landscape this year, for example, or in the last couple of months, there's been this significant uplift of new political parties, the rise, or it's not a phenomenon, but it's almost like a concretization of something which has always been there. This whole idea of independence coming together to form almost a party, but they're still, loosely speaking, a coalition. Dr. Diggis and Dr. Burrows. Let me start with Dr. Burrows first. The idea of not being able to discern clear separation between the style, the offering, the behavior, the approaches of the various parties which are offering themselves for election represents a dilemma for the electorate, isn't it so?
Absolutely, it is a dilemma. And I think what you have right now is you have a high level of dissatisfaction. So the populace has basically said, you know, we've been through cycles of the two predominant parties over and over again, and we don't see significant change. So in a context like that, people begin to rise up and say, well, we need to be the change agents and we need to turn it back. I think that's good. The problem in the Bahamas is that it's largely non-achievable to win the government. You can achieve a lot in terms of activism, in terms of highlighting the issues, in terms of influencing policy.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. You know, there's been a big push about our natural resources. And I think the groundswell from the independents has driven the major political parties to be proactive about issues like that and to actually put it on the front row.
Still there, Dr. Burrows? I think we have lost him. Dr. Diggis, your thoughts on that aspect of the discussion?
So I'll just jump off from where I think Dr. Burrows was taking the conversation. You know, I go back to the point of expectations, and this is contributing to the dilemma in that, yes, it is healthy to have a broad spectrum of individuals who feel that neither option is the one that would suit or fit with their agenda or what they believe to be the solution for the country. That's healthy. As you advance that, you start to see then that here's another obligation on the government to educate individuals not to get rid of the choices. The choices will continue to come. And multiple democracies have shown that. I mean, you could look at double digits almost in terms of choices. But it is really important to delineate what real expectations can be applied to the politics so that the difference between the campaign and the promises and what can be delivered, the population is able to discern to some extent. It doesn't stop the promise, but it does provide you an educated mass of persons who could themselves make decisions, which are quite difficult if you have grandiose promises being put out by individuals who perhaps, you know, may not themselves have the way that they can see this working out, but they could see that this is what we need to do. And again, I support the diverse and multiple opinions. I support the differences brought into the political space completely. I don't want to leave the impression that I don't, but I think this is indicative, this dilemma, because if you end up with numbers that cannot easily be assimilated into a government, you have a new problem as a result of the democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that new problem is the path that we take on the road to growing up.
Yeah.
But to the point that you made, Hubert, and where I think Dr. Burrows was going, we must understand that the government is able to do so much. And it's the responsibility of the government once it has become that. The political party has become the government. Part of that is to just continue to educate the people about what it is that the politics can do and then what it is that other aspects of the makeup of the economy does, including the individual responsibilities.
Yeah, I think that is so important, Dr. Diggis, because the part of the dilemma is driven, as you indicate, expectation gap. And that expectation gap is created by a hardcore or hardened view of what government ought to be doing, is not doing, supposed to be doing, has not done in a number of years. When in fact, government in many instances ought only to be facilitative, they present themselves as the doers. And so if we are going to create real nation building, and if we're going to advance in a significant way through the maturation of the electoral process, the election process, this experiment that we call democracy, it has to start at a place where we are honestly having the conversation, which says, look, we are running a relay, and my best job is to come out of the blocks. Dr. Digges is the guy who is going to take it home, and Dr. Burrows has to be someplace on the backstretch. And when we lose sight of who can do what, all of a sudden we put ourselves in a position to not win. You know, we may get lucky because somebody may drop the button or so on, and we may find ourselves in a position where we celebrate for a moment. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about getting to the place where we are consistently becoming better. And if we don't have those conversations in a very open, honest, and candid manner, the mindset is not going to change. Do we have Dr. Burrows back with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. You can just pick up from where you were.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying that the independent political parties and the activists, what's happening is that their voices are causing change in the environment, and that's a good thing. One of the interesting things about the ones who want to come in.
We've lost him again. I'm not sure what is happening, but something is certainly not working out with the technology this evening. So let's roll on. We'll get back to that, and I certainly know that that's an important point. We will get that in definitely. Dr. Digges, the old principle of personal benefit over what is or what ought to be in the interest of the public good. Ministers or future ministers, candidates, aspirants always espouse this old idea, well, I want to get in there so that I can deliver for you, not for me, not for myself, not for my family, not for a small group, but for you. We are the better person. We are the best people to do this. But history has not borne that out. History has shown us that it is more so that benefits accrue to a narrow grouping rather than a broader grouping. Isn't this one of kind of like maybe one of the fundamental areas which we need to pay as and seek to mature our democracy?
That's a good point, Hubert. After every election and during the campaigning, you hear the appeal for ethical practices. You hear the assertion and the promise that the integrity of the governance will be in a certain manner, and that the interest of the people and the interest of the nation is above all personal interest. And then we witness along the way some either erosion of it or just the imperfections that exist within people that maybe we haven't given attention to how that plays out practically. You know, it's easy to say that, you know, an individual who is not at an income level that's above the poverty line, mm-hmm. it's easy to say that that individual is going to sit and be a part of a decision making that issues and allocates and divvies up substantive contracts which would enable persons within either the constituency or the party to benefit. That's an easy thing to say. I think practically, though, one needs to figure out how does that reach either the integrity message or the ethics message when the individual who is so disenfranchised and is so sacrificed beyond servant, this is sacrifice now, it feels that way that some consideration is given to my sacrifice. I think that's a human,
it's a human tendency.
Yes. And so I think we need to be less naive with the intent and the messaging. You know, you look in the panel and you see, well, they're probably, you know, a proportion of individuals who slip into that multi-million dollar range, and maybe they would not be so tempted, maybe. But reality would show that this is an important conversation. You raise a very important point that beyond the sign, the code of ethics, beyond the promise me that you will behave in a very honorable manner, that it has to be translated into something practical.
Yeah,
and I
think, Dr. Diggers, you know, as you point us in this direction, the when you look at business, which is a multiplicity of systems and processes, if those systems and processes are not self-affirming in some way, if they don't have built into them mechanism which creates trigger or creates have the ability to dissuade persons from going in a particular direction, then they are ineffective. You know, to be very clear, when you pay a member of parliament $28,000, you're inviting him to do interesting things. When you pay a member of parliament $28,000, you have just accorded a value to his worth and his time. And the expectation, therefore, cannot be in a country where the per capita income is 32, cannot be by the system, the messaging coming out of that level, it cannot be excellence. And, you know, in a way, the country may have, or the way we do it, may have put ourselves in a catch-22 in that the subliminal messages which coming out of how we compensate and how we award, we give reward, may be saying to individuals, the system is really not serious about you changing, as opposed to increase, improve, and set the standard and set the accountability at such a level where persons know that this is really, really serious business, and we expect in every single instance excellent performance from you, high ethical standards, and nothing else will suffice. Your thoughts? Dr. Diggers?
I thought Dr. Burrows was
well, here. Dr. Burrows is back. He could jump in.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Diggers. I'll come on the back end.
Okay, fine. You know, I think this is just the way we mature to having the conversation. And you mentioned the business example. And, you know, quid pro quo is something that we tend to tiptoe around because, you know, we feel like individuals put themselves up for national service. And yes, it's admirable that they intend to be servant leaders, representing the voice of the people and acting in a manner that's in the best interest of the people. But there's another dimension, which is a conversation that needs to be had, that if I have nothing and I basically come into a suffrage leadership, which sometimes it can be, it is pounding to be a head of a constituency. When you look at the expectations that the constituency on the lead, the representative's ability to deliver and deliver money. And if the individual has no money, now we see again a contradiction in expectations. It was not made clear. If you don't have that, and that is the expectation, now it's exacerbated. So it's a suffrage that you want to put that individual through. And at the end of it all, applying all of this ethical practice and all retaining all of the integrity and acting in the best interest, this is why I'm saying the conversation is important, but not to be held in a naive manner, but to be worked out in a manner that makes sense. I'm not saying dump a bunch of cash on somebody because they're short, Nor am I saying that individuals who don't have cash should not get into politics. Not at all. They have significant contributions to make. But, you know, they have to go to the needs of their family, and they need to then have a clear line of sight, consistent with and compliant to rules and regulations such that they're not in breach. And I think those are the important conversations to have. And if you think about that, those are conversations of all who get involved in politics. It's almost as if once you've determined your entire panel of individuals who are putting themselves up for politics, there's this intervening class or space where you have a class to speak to individuals about the implications of what you're about to do. Give it a little more thought.
Yes. I think that is important. And, you know, we definitely, as I said earlier, we definitely need to change the narrative. We need to be having open and honest conversation. Dr. Burrows, think about it this way. At $28,000 per year, a member of parliament who doesn't get a cabinet seat, a cabinet position, who does not work as a parliamentary secretary or any of those position which would create added revenue, will make a total sum of $140,000 for 5 years. Think about that. And think about the implication that that may have on that particular individual as a person, as a human being. And but more importantly, think about the possibility of that reality undermining the efficacy of this experiment called democracy and our desire to be to not have corrupt and high standard. Dr. Burrows, you want to jump in on this, and I know you had some thoughts on, you know, this old idea about ethics and morals and how those translate into the whole process and why we experience them in our leaders being microcosm of the entire population itself.
Yeah, our politicians are us. So whatever is going on in the society as a whole happens in our politics. Sometimes people believe that once you get into office, you grow morals. You take your morals with you into office. Whatever your morals and your values are, you take them with you into office. What we have to look at when it comes to the salary of an MP is we have to look at the system. There's no way that a member of parliament should inject their personal finances into their job or taking care of their constituency. If it is a full-time job, then it should have a full-time allocation. Right now, it appears that an MP is a part-time job because the MP is allowed to work otherwise. The salary is very low, and so the system that we have now, and because of the way politics has been shaped, we have this false expectation of what an MP is supposed to do. An MP is supposed to go in his pocket and help out people. I think we need to move beyond that. We need to understand that that's not the way politics works. One of the things that people do every 5 years is they talk about how often the MPs have been seen in the area. Well, if you take a constituency of 4,000 people, if the MP of that area decided to visit one person a day, it would take him, I think, something like 16 years just to see everyone in his community. So we have to move beyond did my MP come to my corner to visit me? We have to move beyond, did they come and bring me turkey and chicken or whatever, did they bring me a present? Mm-hmm. And we have to realize that their job is to represent. Yeah. If there are things to be done for the community, that has to be allocated either in a general budget or the party's budget. But there has to be a mechanism where the individual doesn't have this burden on them that they have to provide financially, like they have children, like the constituents are children. The constituents are fellow citizens and they are there to represent their interests, not to take care of them. So we have to allow our politicians to govern in that fashion. An MP comes into office, he brings his ideas to the table, he goes to his constituents and he said, these are my ideas. And then he goes to the government, there's an allocation for each constituency, regardless of what party it is. And that allocation allows for certain things to happen in the community. I think that's the way it needs to be. We need to move away from you need a rich politician to be a representative, because if they don't have money, they're going to be voted out of office because they didn't give somebody a turkey for Christmas. I think we have to move beyond that. And our democracy needs to mature into systems that are effective and systems that provide for true representation, rather than this archaic system where, you know, the MP is the sugar daddy and has to provide for people.
That's an interesting way of putting it. We're going to take ourselves a break here, but when we come back, gentlemen, I want us to talk a little bit about vision and the importance of vision in leadership, and in this case, in the national sense. Over the last short while, a little bit more than short while, we have been knocking around a national development plan which ought to represent a consensus vision for the country. And instead, we have been working back and forth between two major political parties based on their manifestos, which represent the vision of that party at any point in time for the country. How important is it for us to finally come up, or at least, I'm saying it's finally, but how important is it for us to get to a place where we have a national consensus as to direction, as to the big goals, the big ideas, the big things that we want to achieve, and that then set the framework, the guardrails, by which all political parties, all citizens, all individuals who participate within the confines of the Bahamas, who have money, who make profit here in the Bahamas, look toward as a true north, as the way of moving country forward. Let us take ourselves a break. You listen to The Essentials. I'm having a discussion with Dr. David Burrows and Dr. Charles Diggis. When we come back, leadership and vision, and we want to talk a little bit too about being transformational, because the next 5 years must be transformational. Otherwise, we're going to have a spot of problems. Come right back.
Now that your age is not everything, now that your kids call you for advice, now that you can achieve anything you set your mind to, why stop? Nourish your strength and energy with Ensure. Ensure provides protein, antioxidants, key vitamins and minerals to support your immune system. Now that it's your moment to enjoy your vitality, why stop? Your life, your health, your Ensure.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back. where we are today in this world, going through a pandemic, going through a significant financial crisis, with the country really suffering economically, I think it's critically important that we look to our leaders. And it's critically important that there is an expectation that the leaders have a very clear vision, a vision which is going to take us to a better place, a growing place, an ever-evolving better place. Gentlemen, as you reflect on this whole idea, how important it is now, today, in 2021, going into an election in the next couple of days, that we start to hear more of a clearer vision which is going to create real transformation for the Bahamas, real changes, real reform, real thinking, new narratives in such a way that when we look back 10, 15, 20 years from now, we can say this moment was a critical moment, a tipping point where the Bahamas changed for the better.
Anybody? Dr. Burrows, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think what we have to remember is that, as you mentioned, there should be some things that we agree on regardless of political party. So, for example, something like national health insurance, something like economic diversification, all of these things should be universally agreed on by Bahamians. I don't think any party is divergent when it comes to those things. So we can have a national vision. Now, there are nuances. You know, one party may approach it differently, another mm-hmm. party may approach it differently. But I think we can agree on what are the main goals and objectives for the Bahamas. And to that extent, I think that national vision that you talked about that transcends elections should be in place. Here's what the Bahamas is going to look like 25 years from now. These are the main tenets. I think both parties should have an agreement on the main tenets. They can disagree after the main tenets, but I think there should be a general agreement on what the vision is for the Bahamas. And then I think we have to move away from insults to ideas. So what happens is sometimes when we are not that far apart in terms of vision, then we try to separate from the different parties by insults. And I think we have to move away from insults and move into ideas and say, okay, this here's what we will do differently and let it be clearly delineated. And I think once we do that, then the entire population will be more comfortable about selecting the existing parties on their approach to solving the problem that we all agree on is the problem that we need to solve.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Diggis?
I could jump off that completely in agreement with such an important perspective that, you know, Dr. Burrows has put into this, the view, the vision. And, you know, in my line of business, vision is the driver. We need to see where is it that we're headed. And we don't have to spend so much time arguing about the North Star in terms of what it looks like, as opposed to are we headed north?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are nuances, as you know, Dr. Burrows has pointed out. And there may come a time when the best interest of the country may not be served by the common vision of both parties or all of those
parties. Yeah.
So we have to give ourselves enough room to maintain a running dialogue where we are able to revisit, review, revamp the vision, because it's still along a particular direction, but what we will do to get there may be the differences, and let's have those conversations. How we're going to go about implementing the elements of the vision, that too may create such a difference that explains why the one party elected over the other, but I think it's defining those priorities within what is common. Where are the commonalities? And if we could carve those commonalities out and put a bit of energy behind those, because we're still building a nation and building a best Bahamas. So if we focus a lot on that, then yes, there will be other areas where there's difference of opinion, difference of view, difference of perspective. Those are great, but there may not be, and probably should not be, a difference of the best interest. Let's just, you know, tease these things out so that the leaders can share their vision liberally and not apologize for making changes, but explain the reason why one has to be agile enough to pivot away from a best run in that direction. I'm thinking now, based on some new information that I have, that maybe we just, you know, pivot a little, because this now seems to be the better interest.
Yeah, but you speak to Dr. Diggers. I think your thoughts go to the heart of the culture. And by culture, I mean in this instance, how we do politics, how we create expectation across the populace, how we create expectation in concentrated group, interest group. Because at the end of the day, if you take an objective look at what the political process is about, it's really, in some ways, a marketplace for influence. And in many instances, the influence being sold or bought is being done on credit. The individual or the persons who are vying to become really saying to those who they wish to influence, the persons close to them, if and when, I promise you, which means that I am really extending a credit instrument to you. That credit instrument will be paid by not the person extending it, but ultimately by the shareholder. And in order to satisfy that credit instrument, you cannot, there are at least at points, you are going to find yourself making decisions which are going to be suboptimal to the taxpayer, the shareholder, which therefore means you're not going to manage in the best interest of the greater good because of the way the influence was sold up front. So isn't there a need for there to be a radical shift where we transact this? And it's not new. It's not unique to the Bahamas. It's done elsewhere. One of the things which may be a little bit more glaring is the instances where there may be, you know, incompetence, or there may be persons in positions which are not positions of fit, which then exert another level of cost on the taxpayer. Shouldn't we be talking about how we shift the culture at a political level so that we create an environment which can be more robust and more responsive and more understanding to the needs and the changes in the system in order for us to grow as a fledgling democracy?
You know, you outline the intricacies and the important elements in the game of politics, and none of us want knowledge that these are the realities of politics. One has to get elected. And as you dipped into that pot of options that you have to play in the game to win, I think that's a reality that causes, you know, a number of us to realize that perhaps, you know, our best role is not necessarily in that space. Perhaps we contribute better at another space, a contribution to the national dialogue, for example, or contribute a way to contribute to how people get out of a particular way of thinking. Or, as the point you make, a contribution to trying to move the way we do it, the culture, how we behave, the rules that we apply, and try to move that on a little more, the maturation of the process. And yeah, some of us may be a little more effective in that knowledge. This is a game, to some extent, that's played in intricate and interesting ways. Some of the ways may be very unacceptable to us, but those in the game are very aware that you got to win and you have to be elected. And then you're able to put yourself in a position or be in a position to make decisions. So you won't have that luxury of changing culture, et cetera, until you win.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point you make about,
Dr. Diggins, it demands a commitment on the part of all players to change. Otherwise, it's pretty much a Russian roulette. If the person who isn't committed or the grouping which isn't committed to that change then get elected.
I got you. I hear you. And you know, it's a challenge that in the quiet moments, the leader asks him or herself, is there something bigger than? Is there something called bigger than my party or my party winning the government? If that's the belief of the leader, then he or she then commits to most of what we've been talking about here, which also may risk the loss of the election at the price of getting the Bahamas to where it needs to be. Now, that's a significant maturation, and that's a whole another conversation in a different place.
I think that really is. Dr. Burrows, you wrote, our nation will only succeed if our citizens possess the values that create order, compassion, and fairness.
Absolutely. You know, the thing about it is that nothing exists successfully without order. And for example, if our politicians operate on vices rather than virtues, then we are going to have a vice-filled land. If we govern by corruption, then we're going to have a corrupt society. So it's going to be non-functional. So if we want to make a difference, we have to have a commitment to the values that allow for the nation to move forward. I mentioned earlier that you don't grow morals when you go into politics. So whoever you are when you become a politician or when you become a frontline politician, it's just revealed who you are. So the persons who are vying for office, if we need to look at them and ask ourselves the question, who are they now? Because that's exactly who they're going to be when they're elected to office.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we may have somebody agitating and they say, you know, they want to lead and they're going to be different. But when you look at their life now, their reputation, their ethics is wanting. When that person gets into office, they're not going to change. So the values, Bible makes a statement that's very interesting. It says, the nation rejoices when the righteous are in power. So when people are unethical and they rise to power, the saying goes, woe to the people. The people are going to suffer mm-hmm. because you're going to have people who are interested in their furtherance rather than the furtherance of the people. So those values are very important. And one of the things that I think is important in politics is that as politicians and political parties, you have to learn to express your difference. People are going to elect you based upon your difference. What happens now in the political process is that all parties may be saying essentially the same thing, and their histories, their track record are similar in terms of promising and not delivering and so on. And so there's no difference. And so people begin to elect people not based upon their difference, but based upon their dissatisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
I think parties that are out of office need to refine what their difference is when they, you know, if they are elected, what is going to be different about them? For example, you know, both parties have been in and out of office. In order to return a party that was out of office, you have to ask yourself, what's going to be different this time? And if you can't see a difference and it's not clearly enunciated, then it's going to be hard for that group to be elected. So we have to work on our difference. What separates us from the governing or the current leadership And it has to be clear.
Yeah. You know,
as I said, it can't just be insults, clearly delineated ideas that show the difference. And you have to be able to put a graph up and say, this is where I differ from the current party.
Definitely. It's really about having the ability to clearly outline your value proposition. And, you know, when we talk about leadership and we talk about transformational leadership, which has four different main tenets for, academic or intellectual discussion purposes. But one of those tenets is inspirational motivation. And it talks about the degree to which the leader articulates a vision that is appealing and inspiring, challenges followers to high standard, communicate optimism about future goals, provide meaning for the tasks at hand, and ensure that the people have a strong sense of purpose. Because when you have a strong sense of purpose, that then creates an energy which enables you to move forward and to meet the challenges of the future. You want to have a situation where the visionary aspect, which is linked to the leadership, communicate the skills that which are understandable, which are precise, powerful, and engaging. And that then allows individuals to become more optimistic about the future, believe in their own abilities, and as a result, invest more time and effort into bringing forth what has been articulated in the vision. As we kind of wrap this up, how does that strike you as what is needed for the immediate and the near future?
Well, I think one of the things that happens now is that people try to persuade the population to vote for them by how loudly they complain about a problem instead of how articulate they are in presenting a solution. Mm. For hope. People need to be offered a realistic way out of whatever problem they are in. We pay people to solve a problem. If your car breaks down, you're going to look for a mechanic, because the mechanic has a solution. In the same way, if a country is broken, you want to look for somebody who's offering a solution. Sometimes we don't have anyone offering a solution. We have somebody enunciating a complaint or saying, this is what the other guys did, and they are worse than me. I think you have to present solutions rather than complaints.
Yeah. Dr. Digges?
Yeah, I certainly want to acknowledge the courage of those who step up to the plate and put themselves out to be leaders. But you're correct. I mean, there is some transformational responsibility on the leader to be thinking, what happens if I don't win? What responsibility do I still bear on my contribution to the constituency or to the Bahamian people broadly? And, you know, my suggestion would be that there remains this focus. This is now from candidate to constituency. Yes, the constituents will determine a winner, but surely there's another direction that needs to be viewed. This direction taken on by the leader, who understands that I have a responsibility to continually participate in the national journey of culture, of mind state, of raising this expectation bar and clarifying expectations. I need to enlighten and educate about this process. Win or lose, I need to ignite the fire. I need in inspiring individuals to ask the right questions and not be afraid, as Dr. Burrows pointed out earlier, not be afraid of being different or having differences, but finding amongst the difference, finding the best way forward. And my final submission would be to understand the power of your example, because ultimately it is your example that would speak loudest.
Yes.
As to what and who you are.
Yeah. And that's really what leadership is about. It's again, going back to transformational leadership, the example of you refer to the idealized influence, which, you know, the individual, the leadership stands as a role model, and that is grounded in high ethical behavior, instills pride, gains respect, and gains trust, and therefore become a part of the true north, a part of the direction, a part of the place where we want to be, a part of the idea that here is a glimpse, a representation of your better self, a representation of what we could be, or at least a representation of what we ought to be working towards. It's now a couple of minutes to go before the show is ended. I certainly enjoy this conversation. Always enjoy speaking to the two gentlemen. So as we wrap up, very quickly, in about 60 seconds, Dr. Burrows and Digges, if you had the opportunity, and I'm going to give you the opportunity, all the political parties, all the leaders in 1 minute, what is it that you would say to them as a means of conveying the importance of thinking about this election, a very critical election, a very transformative moment, so that the Bahamas can approach or start to approach and evolve to become the best Bahamas?
I'll let Dr. Burrows have the last word, since he's probably much better positioned to do that. My brief commentary and focus would be to remember that there is something much bigger than ourselves, much bigger than the political parties that we represent. And that has to be the North Star. That has to be the we're all in this. As deeply as they are, or as peripheral as some of us are, it's because we have a country to take care of, to grow, and we have a generation of persons behind us looking up at us and wondering, what exactly is it that we are about? Are we building a nation that they can be proud of, to be a part of? Are we maturing the dialogue such that there is no shame in being in politics or being sidelined? Let's just be mindful that there is something bigger that this is all about.
Dr. Burrows, 30, 60 seconds.
Okay, yeah, I think we have to remember that we don't have a second Bahamas. There's only one Bahamas. So we need to bring the ideas and the solutions to the table that make us the best Bahamas. We want to encourage those running for office to remember that Bahamians don't hear with their ears. They hear with their eyes. You can say anything, but people are watching what you do to determine whether they're going to vote for you or support you. So it's very important for you to look like who you say you are.
Definitely. I want to thank you, gentlemen, so much for contributing to this wonderful conversation. And ladies and gentlemen, as you listen, all we are simply doing here is saying we recognize the possibility. Dr. Digges always talk about the limitlessness of possibilities. There is a bigger Bahamas out there. There's a greater Bahamas. There's greatness embedded in every single one of us and collectively in all of us. And that greatness requires leadership, and it requires leadership to operate at the highest level. And simply all we ask for in this moment is for the best of us to emerge. I personally am agnostic to whoever it is. At the end of the day, no one wins unless the Bahamas wins. We always never allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You've been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Good night. Enjoy.